three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff wraps it up.
Holy moly. Is this thing on? Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast, recording this on Tuesday, the 5th of December at about 10 to 10 on the East Coast. And on the West Coast, well, I wouldn't know because my beloved co-host Andrew Kenyon couldn't make it. So it's just me. I know, I'm as upset about it as you are, you know. I hate myself. Why should you be any different? You know, I spit at myself in the mirror, so don't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all if people turn off right now. But Kenyon assures me he'll be back in the near future. And of course, this show will improve when it does. But if we could all just hold him in our hearts and in our spirits until his return, that would be great. Before we jump into anything, you're on NBL Pocket Pod and we have a Patreon. So if you'd like the show and want to subscribe, want to follow and support the show, do. Patreon, the link is in the description. Twitter, at NBL Pocket Pod. That's mainly curated by me, unless, of course, something terrible is said. Then I was either hacked or Kenyon was operating the account or someone else who shall remain nameless. But that is at NBL Pocket Pod. Do indeed get involved. We have an Instagram. We have a TikTok. We have a YouTube. None of them are particularly populated. The YouTube, though, if you're one of those people that kind of likes to listen to pods through a website at work or something, or you know, you're bored at work and you want to have an extra tab open and listen to something, we are available audiograms on YouTube. There's an AI that does it for free. So there you go, podcasters. If you're interested, contact me and I'll tell you how to do it. More important than all that BS is, what are we talking about this week? My topics are Josh Giddey. We're actually going to have a chat about it, or at least I am. 36ers and their scheduling schmozzle. Brisbane. Are Brisbane the most charitable team in the NBL? Then we're talking about positionless all-NBL teams. And then a segment I'm calling, How Are We Looking? A look at the table and what's happening and what's good. And then we're going to talk a little bit about podcasting and media. The NBL podcasting season is kind of ticking along and seeing what's going well, what's not, what's working, the media side of it. Very brief chat there. I don't really have a lot to kick on with. But before that, let's talk about Josh Giddey. As much as is allowed. Boy, this is... I go back and forth on the reporting. 2 seconds, just got to shut a door here. I go back and forth on the reporting. I think that it's been measured. It's been cautious, but it hasn't been terrible. Not in this country anyway. I don't think that a lot of US outlets are particularly game on the story. It's a horrible situation. It's a lot of legality around it. Very interesting one. Considering his age and what's going on, for people who don't know, 21-year-old, but at the time of the quote-unquote crime, 19-year-old Josh Giddey was involved with a 15-year-old girl. Involved to what degree? Been quoted as a one-night stand. Could it be more? Could it be less? That's where the investigation is at the minute. I certainly don't want to speculate, as do many others. But the coverage, excluding Matt Logue, I think has been, I know what I just said, it's been very sparse. I won't say poor, but I'll say sparse. Very few people other than Matt Logue and a few others have been willing to put their names to any stories, and not speculation either, just reporting of, you know, an investigation has been opened, the family's not cooperating, or this or that. Just what we know from a very meat and potatoes level has been pretty sparse. And on these articles going forward, people, look at the bylines. You won't see any little circle face with a name. You'll see, you know, website staff or from the news line. It'll never be, not very few people will be willing to put their byline to this one. Matt Logue has, so tip of the cap to him. You know, Giddey is not a dirty word. Reporters and insiders are hiding behind that line. I don't want to speculate, but there's a big difference between speculating and actually reporting. The problem is, as I've said from the beginning, is if you badmouth Giddey, you'll find that your place card at the luncheons has disappeared. Your seat is taken and your photo ops for your lock screen or what have you, they dry up pretty fast. And for a lot of people in this business, that holds a lot of weight. Anyway, we'll see what happens. But adding to the confusion of this story is the agent, formerly of Lighthouse Sports, now, well, formerly Octagon, Daniel Moldovan, fired. Don't know if fired's the right term, or let go, or stepped away, resigned, not quite sure, but he's out of there as a result of comments made online. Strange choice. So for people who don't know, Black Lives Matter, I want to say a particular fraction of it, put out an Instagram post of a hang glider, which was sort of the weapon used in the latest Israel-Palestine conflict, with a Palestinian flag saying, "We support Palestine." In fairness to Moldovan, a very provocative image, probably not their finest moment. His reply, certainly not his finest moment, but nonetheless, he's out. Now, whether it was sort of he wanted out and did something like that, I couldn't comment on to that. I have no idea, but he's not a foolish person. He had to know there was going to be repercussions. It seems peculiar. It seems a strange career choice, is what I'd say. As strange and perhaps as more surprising as the fact that Giddy is sticking with Moldovan, despite the crises that he finds himself in, staying with the guy. An understandable move, but with the protection of a major agency like Octagon, which for people out there, I think Steph Curry is one of their clients. So if that's one of their clients, they've got others also across many fields, not just basketball. To my knowledge, Moldovan specializes in basketball. It doesn't really cross into entertainment, things like that, or did when he was at Octagon, but now back to sort of the Lighthouse Sports model. Is he going to take on a new name? Is he going to come back? I don't know. It's something to monitor. But Giddy deciding to turn his back on the big agency, what it does do is it frees up the opportunity for Daniel to take up one of those internships he was so keen on. We got to chatting over Twitter. I'm sure there's some internships out there. He's probably above that pay grade, but yeah, I'll just say this. We'd always accept an intern here at NBL Pocket Pod. You know, you could push around some papers or something. As long as you promise to stay out of trouble, we can find something for you here. But I'm not going to be waiting by the phone. Also on the Giddy story, well-known, high-profile lawyer Gloria Allred is now representing the family of the, I don't know how to phrase this, the second party, the other party involved in this. This particular lawyer, she's famous for many things, but among them is representing the 30 accused of Bill Cosby. Related, not related, coincidence, we're going to find out. But looking more broadly at the Giddy issue, Josh Giddy, 1 year out from big money, had to finish this season and then next, and then was due an extension. And normally that extension is negotiated in that last year before that contract runs up. $40 million, I think, from WheatBix is on the line. And then moving back onto the basketball court, if we can try and keep it there, which is where we can all comment on with a degree of certainty, Josh Giddy is down in every statistical category, and it's coinciding with the team's best season in a long time since those great sort of Kevin Durant, Westbrook, Harden days. Their record is 13-6 at the time of recording. Australia finished 10th at the World Cup, well down on their number 3 world ranking heading into that World Cup. He was one of, if not the best players. Some of his deficiencies became team deficiencies. Played admirably, I thought, but I thought the expectation greatly outweighed what was realistic. Getting booed, he's now getting booed on the road in the NBA, getting booed at home a little bit, starting to get booed at home as more this story intensifies. You know, and it sounds callous, but it's the truth of it is that good players are players' ticket through controversy. Just ask the Kobe Bryant circa 2003. The big problem for Giddy is, though, his play's never been worse. He's playing poorly, and the holes in his game are as gaping as they were in his rookie year, if not worse. Tough season ahead. I feel really bad for the 21-year-old. It's just brutal. Brutal season incoming. And here at NBL Pocket Pod, we'll keep you covered as best we can. 36ers, let's move on. 36ers blame their horrible performance against, shucks, who was that? Tasmania. Their horrible performance against Tasmania on the travel, saying they had to get up a flight at 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. and dot, dot, dot. There's better reporting on this at NBL.com. People out there, go and check it out. And as I was saying, he and the team should probably direct their ire at Grant Kelly and co, booking red-eye flights on the sly over Skyscanner. I will say it was good of the NBL to report on a bit of controversy. I mean, they reported on a controversy. They kind of had their gun aimed and cocked and ready. I liked what the NBL did. I thought it was good. Moving on, very short episode today. Very short episode. A reminder, we're on Patreon if you want to throw some money at the pod. Appreciate it. Are Brisbane the most charitable team in the NBL? Topic we're moving on to. Other than a 9-point loss to Sydney, 4 of Brisbane's last 5 games have been decided by 5 points or less. They are 2-3 in that stretch, dropping some. Every game this team drops is heartbreaking, but they keep coming back. As I was saying, they are 2-3 in that stretch of 5 games, having played as low a competitor as the last placed Hawks and the penultimate table toppers in Tasmania. So, whether you're the worst team or one of the better teams, Brisbane are going to let you hang around and, they're going to duke it out in the last 2-3 minutes. It's great. Their next game, the Bullets' next game, is at Brisbane after United are coming off a loss to Cairns on the road. I think that Brisbane's run of close games is set to end. I think they're going to lose that game and by a lot more than 5 points. That's my prediction. I think you've got a bruised, hurt United. I think they're getting a few bodies back at home. Good luck. It's going to be a rock fight, but Melbourne United are going to crush them, I think. All NBL teams, they've gone positionless. People are up in arms. A friend of the show, Body Nodge, not happy. Find his work at bodynodge.com. Yeah, he's not happy. A lot of people aren't happy. I like the change. And when Canyon comes back, we'll get his thoughts on the matter. I like the change. And the game's positionless has been for a while, probably always has been, other than when coaches want to insert it themselves or create positions as a way for the average fan to understand this game better. It's an American creation. Positions are typically a NFL thing, and I think that has bled over, but Europe doesn't see it this way, and the better players don't see it this way. They can kind of do everything. But let's look on paper, and let's keep it to the NBL. Why they go positionless, the good of it. I like it. Let's look at last season, right? Let's look at some data. Last season's NBL first and second teams were as follows. Cooks, Creek, Cotton, Doyle, Walton. That was first team. So Cotton, Doyle, and Walton, your outside or wing players. And then Cooks and Creek, your inside guys. Second team, you had Brown, Golding, Hogue, Pardon, Pinder. So I think your outside guy, it's even blurry now. Like, is Hogue an outside guy? Was he an inside guy? Was he a wing? Was he a small? The partitions were already getting stupid. And I think that having said that, to define is to limit. So therefore to limit is to define. But despite that, I like it. I like the change. And what's interesting is if you didn't have that partition last year, you'd probably see Jarrell Brantley make it to one of those teams. Probably not the first team, probably the second team. Pinned out a good year. Just Golding come out of that team and Brantley go in if there's not the inside-outside partition. That would be a more accurate depiction of who was best. I mean, now without that, Brantley, who I don't think finished in the top 5 in the MVP voting, his contribution, except with the Hardos, kind of disappears. He's not on that, etched on those awards. Does it matter? Probably not. But, I don't get the counter-argument that these partitions in the awards somehow were these Roman columns of the sport that held up the sort of good virtues of teamwork and part. I don't get it. It'd be different if these teams were being selected and then going off and playing in the summer league or, form part of the Olympic squad or something like that. I don't know. Or formed an NBL team select that toured the country and the planet or whatever. But they're not doing that. This is just the awards are this there to value and reward the top 5-10 guys. I've never really understood the position thing. And, the positions have been ridiculous from the beginning where Creek has fallen into inside-outside. There's always the debate about it. I suppose that's kind of fun. But do read Boddy's article. We love Boddy here, but I disagree with his article. And I think the big issue here is, I'm not criticizing anyone. I am criticizing. People say that I'm not doing this, but they are. I'm about to do it. I think this is another chance to take a shot at LK and Larry Kesselman and the new ownership group. I don't think it's change for change's sake. I think the timing is peculiar. I agree with that. Why you do it mid-season and not at the start of the year? If you had good, clear thought, you'd do it at the start of the year. Did they hold off until now to create some buzz? they're in a contract year with the TV rights. Maybe, I wouldn't have thought so, but here we are. But I think a lot of people are using any sort of change in the NBL to take a slight at, to take a punch, a low blow at the current management. And I'm all for low blows. I'm all for low blows, but only when they're warranted. I just don't think it's warranted in this case. But looking at it, let's look at who I would put in an All-NBL team if the season quarterized, just came to a stop tomorrow. And here's who I'd have. Cotton's a must. Adams and Doyle, I think, are musts. I think Lamb in New Zealand is a must. The team's a bit average, but he keeps them in and around. I think that guy is... I think him and Cotton are the best two players. Him, Cotton, and Doyle are the three best players in the NBL at the minute. Cotton, then Lamb, then Doyle, just from a pure schoolyard, line them up, you know, roll the balls out. Who you picking first? It's Cotton and Lamb. I think Lamb's awesome, fun to watch, real smooth. Yeah, Christmas Lamb, you know what I mean? Lamb Bam, thank you, ma'am. I think I had another nickname. Oh, New England Lamb Chowder. Guy can play, so I got totally distracted. But Lamb, Cotton, Adams, Doyle, and Joe Luol Chul. Yeah, Melbourne, top of the ladder by a long way. Huge win tally. I actually want to get two guys from their team in the five, but don't really know who comes out. I think Doyle, Lamb, and Cotton are musts. Adams hasn't had quite the year we suspected, but still a really good player. So for that reason, number five. On the peripherals, and could easily jump periphery, and could easily jump in, Alan Williams, Golding, Creek, Parker, Jackson, Cartwright, hard name to get right, PJC, and then Miller or Sobey. I was kind of crossing it up, but I think because, I mean, Brisbane have got the better record, but I think they do it by committee. Miller's been amazing. I'd probably put Miller over Sobey, so that would be my 10. My top five would be Achul, Lamb, Cotton, Adams, Doyle. Below that, Williams, Creek, PJC, and Miller. Williams, Golding, Creek, PJC, Miller. They're my guys, with Sobey kind of missing out. But I do want to talk about some outsiders or some sort of roughies who probably aren't going to make these teams. I'm talking more guys that could, you know, on the chance of getting a second team, but aren't quite there or need a bit of luck to go their way. And as a result of not making those teams, their seasons kind of dissipate. After a couple of years, they're forgotten. And I want to say Crawford down in for the Jack Jumpers, he's been really good. Travers or Illy or Huck Porty. It's like, who's been the most impactful? I kind of lead towards Huck Porty. Catching lobs, roll threat, playing D, just smothering guys out of the paint. But then Shay Illy playing terribly on offense, had that horrible start to the year. But then it's pretty much clamped up most of the guys he's played. Guy's terrific. So tough one. And then Travers, again, feathery dunks. They've got the gusto of a mother laying a newborn down and it's swaddling in a bassinet. But he does a bit of everything, and I've been quite interested in him. But then the other one I'll talk about, the other two who I think could are the most likely in my mind to just scrape into a second team. Jonah Bolden had a really good game last time out against Perth. Just looks to be too much athletically for a lot of the league. Just way too long and strong. Good player. Really good player. And then, yeah, almost could have been in the Boomers. It's almost like he felt slighted when he was playing in the NBA and had to sit behind an NBL guy. Yeah, a little bit. That would kind of hurt your career. And then Jack McVay is another guy down in Tasmania. I just think he... Talk about taking on the moment. Stats are never freely gotten in Tasmania, so he doesn't jump off the page, but every time I watch them play, he's always a part of every something good, so got a lot of respect for his game. Moving on, how are we looking as far as championships? What teams are good, what teams aren't? This season is interesting. Seven teams, I think, really have a shot at the title. I obviously not all have the same shot, but your long shots have a chance. Like a team like Cairns could make the final for sure. They've got a losing record at the minute, but they could do that definitely. In Brisbane, like if they just sort of hammer out games, I mean, again, long shot, but I think Cairns are the longest shot of this group, and they're about $30 or $40 to win the championship. So you look at the finals odds, you know, very possible. The three teams, I mean, unsurprisingly, the the three bottom teams are a total write-off. Adelaide, the Hawks, obviously, are a little bit better under their new coach, but it's only been two games. A bit more direction on that team, but woefully last. Adelaide and then New Zealand have just been hit by the injury bug, and they've been bit bad, and there's no coming back for the Breakers. It was alliteration, a lot of B words. So they're kind of done. But outside of those three, the seven, as I said, are pretty good. Unsurprisingly, the bottom three teams have the worst defensive ratings. Illawarra, New Zealand, Adelaide in that order. This has been the staple of the NBL for a while now. Cairns, Melbourne, Brisbane, Tasmania are top four in defensive rating in that order. And that pretty much reflects the table. Cairns and Brisbane, the only high jumpers. Melbourne, Tasmania in the top four. So Brisbane just need to up that offensive game. But as the way, if you play D in the NBL, you're always a chance. And even Cairns and Brisbane, I'm not writing them off for sort of real, certainly top six chances, top four chances. Yeah, last two teams of the season, probably not, but they could be irritating. Interestingly, the Sydney Kings are seventh in defensive rating, and by quite a bit. And I think we talked about this last time, Canyon and I. The team's kind of missing that guy on the wing. They got Bolden, and he's still finding his feet, and maybe he matures into it. But they've got size in that position, Tui and Valentine, but they don't have that Justin Simon, Cooks, Swaka the Bullock. And I know Cooks is a bit bigger, but he was so athletic and long, he could do everything. He could guard 1 through 5. They don't have that guy. And that wing guy who's just causing trouble for the team's best offensive player and able to get out and run. Simon was really good at that last year, and they just don't have it on this roster. Quite the opposite, Tui and Valentine are very different to Simon, and it's kind of showed. But even Swaka 2 years ago, Swaka the Bullock, huge defensive threat on the wing, and just his assignment was hit an open shot, get layups when you're out in the break, and when the game slows down, go to the team's best and try and stop him. And that has always worked well for Sydney, and they just don't quite have it. Galloway's shown a lot, but it's not quite there for mine. I need to watch a bit more of him. I don't want to chastise him, having not fully solidified my thoughts on it, but he's there. So anyway, to wrap it up, how are we looking outside of the three hopeless outfits? The year is good. Moving on to our last topic, we're at 22 minutes. We're going to come well under this week. I think last week the episode had about 650 listens, maybe not quite 550, something like that. I stopped checking a long time ago, but for those that do listen and enjoy, I really appreciate it. And you can get in touch with us anytime on Twitter or at NBL Pocket. Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod, but also via Gmail, nblpocketpodcast@gmail.com. Send through any questions or rude photographs or whatever. Blackmail attempts, put it all through there. Podcasting and media, people hate sometimes when we talk about this, but I think it's important. I don't know. I've looked at the numbers on overtime. I sort of see it as I scroll up on Twitter, and the numbers are still kind of there. The 1.5 to 2,000 views on Twitter. I haven't really bothered to check it out on YouTube. I can only assume it's the same number. Maybe it's gone up. Maybe it's gone down. I don't know. I think the lack of homicide is missed on that show. I think they do an admirable job, and the content's quite good. I haven't engaged with it, not as a stance against the quality of the content. It's more of a time issue on my part. It's a good show. They're good guys. They do a good work. Corey, big shoes to fill, and they've missed him there. And he just had that, je ne sais quoi, that little bit of chemistry that just brought over the casual, I thought. I really thought Corey was, and this is what the NBL needs to define, they're trying very hard with Lowry and Rucker and others, sort of newer comers. I know they've been around forever, but they're getting more of it now, more of their quotes clipped and things. But for the NBL, for mine, this is the only pointer I'll give, because I don't want, I'll charge a consultancy fee, but they haven't quite got that, the casual's entry point. Corey Homicide was that guy, the entry point for new fans to the league, and in particular young fans. I think he really spoke to fans under 18. They haven't quite found that talent yet, and I don't know who it is either, so it's a tough job locating who these people are, but they've got to find out who that is, and whether it is someone younger or older, I don't know, but The other guys are great. They're very technical. They're very knowledgeable. They speak well on camera. They've got great chemistry with each other. But, you know, I think in the light of day, if you just said, you know, who's speaking to the biggest growth market of basketball in Australia, the under 18s, that may be, or maybe it's a tonal thing and those guys can do it and change. I don't know. I'm not around it enough. I don't look at their numbers well enough. But changing tact a wee bit, the Las Vegas Grand Prix happened just recently and made a lot of money. That week in Vegas made more money than the entire year combined or something. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Or maybe, you know, it beat out the other big weeks of the year in Vegas. I think Thanksgiving is normally big over there and similar time. And no, here's what happened. Normally Thanksgiving is a bad week in Vegas. They held it during Thanksgiving and it basically beat out every other time of year. So you know, F1's really big. Why do I bring up F1? Well, they're the model for the NBL. And not that I say they should, not in an aspirational way, like they should aim to be the F1. They're trying to replicate that. And so it's good to look at it at the blue ribbon top level and see how what they're doing and how it correlates or doesn't quite sync up with the NBL. But so the F1 does all its own media in-house, much like the NBL does. The NBL has NBL media. And they do that in-house and then they distribute it to their partners, be it Fox Sports or BN Sports or whatever F1's on in Europe. I really don't know. But Formula One itself is predominantly owned by a media company, Liberty Media, which is a USA, owned by billionaire John Carl Malone, who owns, as I said, about 65% of the Formula One shares. So he basically owns the league. So the Formula One is a media product, or at least it's owned by a media product or person. And as a result, F1 does an amazing job of fan engagement and experience. And that is the new buzzword in 2023 around sports media is fan experience. Are you giving the fans a genuine experience? Are you giving them an interactive experience? Are they getting from the sport what they need? Is the sport being earnest and honest in its depiction? And the F1 does an amazing job with those shows, Drive to Survive or whatever it is. That's a TV show, that's a movie. The way they make that, it could be about any topic on the planet. And the NBL is clearly trying to replicate that. It doesn't have the budget. I mean, Malone has a net worth of $10 billion. Larry Kesselman, $1.5 billion, $2 billion. You know, I can't believe we're talking about, you know, Kesselman being on a beer budget, but $10 billion is more than $1.5 billion or near $2 billion, which is Kesselman's reported net worth. So they're trying to do it. It's a lot of work. It's very difficult, but the objective is the same. Problem is, I don't think the NBL's broadcast partners do a good enough job of providing an enjoyable fan experience. I think the NBL itself does. Its graphics are great. Its socials are good. It's the way it covers the game. Its commentary teams are better. A lot more John Casey in arena. You know, people complained and they heard. Very few people have said the commentary is much better. I'm here saying it's in stadium. It feels and looks better. It's a better fan experience. Thank you, NBL. I'm happy to say it. But the other partners, these sort of newspaper shows, not done by the NBL, are lame. I'm here to say it. They do not reflect the fan experience. They're not engaging. They're lame and dated. And that's and anachronistic. They like stuff from the 90s. It's not good. The talent involved, I won't comment. Some good, some bad, but I just don't like the form. I don't like the structure. And I think if you spoke to kids of the biggest potential growth market of the NBL, I think they'd share the same point of view. I think they'd think this is not. Well, I'm not. They wouldn't watch it. Surely not. I mean, we've all been on TikTok. It's way better. It's more entertaining. It's funnier. It's more shoot from the hip. I mean, some of the giddy memes. I hate to laugh at that sort of stuff, and I got peppered by it. Some of them were pretty gosh darn hilarious. So. I shouldn't laugh at that. That's terrible. If you're out there on TikTok making fun of that sort of thing, shame on you. But this is the most rambling topic we've ever had on NBL Pocket Pod, but it's coming to an end, which is a good thing. And I would give my thoughts backed with industry observations and data, but I'm not going to. I know I have a pretty strong comprehension of what content they should make and what would register well and what would be sponsorable and what would go well, but... as I say, when I'm paid a consultancy fee, I'll consider it. But until such a time, I'll just shut my big mouth. And that's exactly what I'm going to do because we've now crossed the 29-minute mark. I was gunning for 30 minutes without Canyon, and it looks like we're, well, let's call this 30 minutes and let's call it a day. Everybody, thank you very much for listening to what was probably the worst episode of NBL Pocket Pod. I do much appreciate it. Kanyon will return. We know he's your favorite. It's fine. I'm not hurt. The lights at the disco have come up. My mug is in your face. I get it. We all want to kiss a prince. And the sweet prince, Kanyon, will return. I'm getting out of here, but before I do, for about the fourth or fifth time, we have a Patreon. And if you enjoy the show, become a Patreon member. It's a fiver a month or something. It's like $2 an episode. We'd appreciate that if you could. Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod. Insta, NBL Pocket Podcast or something like that. And then YouTube as well, if you want to listen to this on the sly, on your employer's dime. Do indeed. Thanks very much, everyone. Joe Corr here, and see you next week. Bye.